Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Thursday, J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
From the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli after the Gus Bradley Show on Thursday night on the Jaguars Radio Network. We'll get to your calls coming up, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. The team is here, gentlemen. They have arrived. All but one is here. The veterans reported today, so 89 of 90 players are here, and they're on the field tomorrow at 9:55. It's like the night before Christmas.
Yeah, I know, and I know Gus talked about Chris a little bit at the beginning, and Jeff, in your opinion, based on what Gus has said, and he said today at the press conference and everything else, and reading the comments, how much rope does Chris have in this deal? Now, listen, we don't know what it is. It's a personal reason, so I'm not saying anything bad about – I mean, maybe it's something very serious. I mean, just what – but this is a guy – and I only bring it up because Chris has made the habit, which is his right, not to come to off-season programs.
See, this is what I was talking about.
Yeah. unless it's mandatory.
About perception.
I'm just saying perception-wise.
Yeah, sure.
And so it could be the worst – I mean, this would be something very serious, and I'm not saying it's not. And so I'm not making a judgment one way or another, but you wonder from the outside –
sure.
And I read things on Twitter where people say, which are ridiculous, you know, how long are they going to put up with this and everything else.
Right.
But if it's a personal issue, you know, but getting the sense from the head coach, I mean, what is your sense of the entire situation? Is this something
it's anything serious.
Nothing serious.
But, you know, here's the thing. If it were a second or a third year player or somebody that was in his fifth year and it was a contract year, you know, a young player, I probably would have some serious concern.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a 12-year veteran in Chris Clemens who has a great relationship by all appearances with the head coach, Gus Bradley, and also the defensive line coach, Todd Walsh, because they spent so much time together, not only here but also in Seattle. So I don't worry much about that, but I also understand the perception that it can appear very bad, you know, and that because of that relationship, the last thing in the world I think that you want as a coach – is to have the perception in the locker room that, hey, that's Gus's guy. He's letting him slide. You know, so, you know, I still believe that, you know, whenever he does come in, that the team has to show, hey, look, that there is no favoritism, whether it be by fine or whatever it may be. But the good thing is communication has happened.
To me, it all depends, honestly, on what the issue is. If it's something out of the guy's control,
right,
and it's family related or whatever – I mean, then I think you support him. And I think that needs to be communicated to the team. I don't think it matters outside the locker room, but if it's that type of issue, you support the guy. And I don't care if he didn't show up for an off-season program or not. If it's a family or a personal issue that is serious, out of Chris Clemens' control, you support him. Where it gets dicey is if this is something that should have been dealt with or could be dealt with in a different manner, I think that's where you start getting, to your point, Jeff, the perception issues and some concerns is there. You don't want any chirping in the locker room of favoritism
right,
or anything else.
Exactly.
And I think part of the reason this is even a topic in the media and such is, like you said, he hasn't really built up the equity of being around here to maybe have.
That's what I was saying about perception.
Exactly what you said.
You know, if he was here throughout all the voluntary things and the OTAs and everything else, it would not be an issue. But because he was not, a lot of people react differently, and I get that. But, you know, you got to remember, it is the player's right, according to the collective bargaining agreement.
Not to show up.
Be here during OTAs and other voluntary things. He was here for the minicamp, as he was asked to be. And
he did everything he was supposed to by under contract. Not everything that coaches probably want him to do, but everything he was supposed to do under contract.
But let's just kind of wait and see what happens over the next day or two.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
It made me
think.
But
it is. It's headlines.
And I just hope it's nothing too serious.
Right.
I mean, for him.
Jeremy Mincy didn't report. That was big news. Did you see that?
That's right. He's holding
in,
out.
In Dallas?
Yeah.
Why didn't he report?
He wants more money.
Oh, gosh.
Wants more money. Just got to sign a contract last year, like a two-year, $5 million deal, and Mr. Mintz wants more money.
Yeah.
If I was Dallas, I'd be like, no.
They did. They told him. They said, forget it.
Where does he rank in the whole defensive end scheme in the league anyway? I mean, he's what? I don't know. Top 50.
Listen, he plays hard. I'm not going to disrespect.
What was the number you just threw out?
Top 50 defensive end?
Oh, I thought he said top 10. I'm like, God.
No. Is he in the top?
Top 50. So
30?
Well, he's in that range.
Well,
he's around 50.
Wait, okay, so there's two starters on every team. That's 64.
Right. He's around 50, 40, 50, somewhere in that range. I mean, Jeremy plays pretty good football.
He plays hard.
Plays hard.
I'm not going to disparage Jeremy Missy. He plays hard.
Okay.
I think sometimes
just
there's
bringing up a number.
I think there's a reality check that needs to happen sometimes.
Oh, he's going to get it.
Oh, he's going to find it real
soon. He's going to get it.
I think he got the reality check here when he was let go.
Jerry Jones just had a
and I think he'll get a reality check when Jerry Jones says, Mr. Mintz.
He just had a new joint put in.
We're
and just gave
not.
A bunch of money to Dez Bryant.
Yeah, we're not giving you any more money.
Oh, no. Mintz, you better bark up another tree.
Some injury updates today from the head coach. He just talked about it on the show again. Marquise Lee cleared, ready to practice tomorrow.
Good. That's one of the ones I'm looking forward to watch. I think that's one of the biggest stories of camp.
Because I think Allen Robinson is going to be a superb player, and I think that, and I've said this all along, I think Allen Robinson has the ability and the drive to be the best wide receiver that the Jaguars have, but there is no question.
Have on this roster, not ever.
Right. On this roster.
I thought you were about
no,
to
no,
say
no, 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 no.
Wow, that's strong. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to say that.
Let me put that out on Twitter right now.
Jeff, don't overreact. Kind of like Pete Prisco did and tweeting out a 50th birthday wish to me.
Oh,
which it
wow.
wasn't 50, it was 48, Pete Prisco.
But I think what you're going to say is.
But Marquise Lee is the most explosive.
No, he's the most physically talented guy at that position on the roster.
Yeah, he is the most explosive offensive weapon. When he is on his money.
And Gus said that recently, too. He's the most explosive player we have.
He is a fantastic player.
You've got to be on the field. You got to be healthy. You got to know where to go. And I root extra hard for Marquise because he's my guy from SC.
Apparently so.
And so I just.
And I like him.
I do, too. And I like Marquise. Yeah. So I got double reasons. I like him, and he's an SC guy. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm hoping he has a great year. But that's a guy I'll be watching closely and hope all the injuries are behind him. And he has spent the time when he wasn't in there of learning the offense that Greg Olsen has introduced during the offseason.
Let me bring up another point because the perception, here we go back to this perception thing, is that, you know, why is Marquise Lee not practicing in the offseason? Well, we don't know because they're not obligated to disclose injury information in the offseason, which they did not about Marquise Lee. They didn't give anybody any idea to the extent of what was going
on. Some injury.
We just knew that it was
a
knee.
Yeah, lower knee, he had a brace on. That's the only reason we even knew it was a knee.
Yeah.
Because he was wearing a brace.
That's it.
No idea what happened.
I just hope that he gets a full training camp because
I hope him and Allen.
He needs it.
Well, so does Allen Robinson. They
absolutely.
Both need it
because Allen Robinson's never had. Neither one of them had a full training camp.
No,
that's right. Gus Bradley earlier today had his training camp opening press conference. He was asked if Marquise Lee was ready to go and expanded on repetitions in training camp.
I'm excited for him. I know there's a lot of some questions and things like that. I don't have a doubt with Marquise. I think I really like what I've seen in him and his approach.
Oh, like we just said earlier. But he, like they did last year, they're going to limit some reps here or there early, give a lot of guys some reps with the ones and kind of rotate things around. And then once you get later in camp, you narrow that down a little bit.
Well,
the guys that might be injury prone or have some issues.
And I think that Gus brought up a great point is that they try to do that with the entire wide receiver group. I mean, if you've ever, you know, as a fan or as an analyst, you watch practice, the wide receiving group and the defensive backs, more so the wide receiving group, the amount that they run in practice is crazy. I mean, it is a ton of running. So to limit them, to control the reps, that's why you hope to go into a training camp not down anybody at the wide receiver position, so you can spread that the repetitions around evenly amongst all. And I was looking at my list earlier. There's 11 wide receivers that they have on the roster.
Let's think about this. Do the math on this. So you run 20 yards on a snap. You jog back to the huddle. How long between the next play? 20 seconds? 25 seconds?
In a game?
On 11-on-11 drill.
Like in practice?
In practice.
Well, in practice, it's not very often, unless it's a two-minute drill, that they go back-to-back.
Okay.
But during a game, when you run up tempo, I mean, it's, you know, that can get really crazy, you know. So, but that is a position group, you know. And the interesting thing is, and this would be a great question for the Jaguars' head strength and conditioning coach Thomas Linsky. They track all the players on the Jaguars roster via GPS. They literally back, if you watch the players, and for those fans that are going to come out and watch a training camp practice, on the back of their jersey where their name is, they have a little pocket. And it's kind of hard to see, but you'll notice that there's like a little bump between the shoulder blades, or if somebody had long hair, where the long hair might be.
Right underneath the nameplate.
It's right underneath the nameplate. What they do is they keep the stitches open at the top, and what they're doing is they're dropping little GPS units into the back of their jersey so that they can actually track the amount of running distance that every individual player has traveled throughout a practice. And that's actually how that they monitor the amount of work that is being done by each individual, and they actually get more than just distance out of it. They get the speed, the rate, and everything else. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty amazing thing, because after practice you can see they've got this big giant briefcase thing that's got all padded slots for it, and they're taking the GPS trackers back from the players as they're leaving the practice field to go back and download the data to give them a printout of exactly what these players are doing in a practice. To me, it's crazy. It's
cool. You know what I'd do? I'd have taken mine off and taped it like to Jimmy or Keaton on their ankles without anyone knowing. So, like, and then got it back right before and put it in there. It's like, man, Tony ran a lot today.
We're gonna hold him out tomorrow.
He's like, man, we got to give him a break. He's put a lot of time in. He's working hard. Let's give him a break.
Have you guys ever seen those new kind of watches, the little Fitbits or whatever they're called?
I need
to, like, if anybody has a challenge, like, get one of the Jaguars players to wear it during training camp and
let them get some steps in, except the ones that Jags have. That's what Tony's talking about.
Right now it doesn't matter. We're not doing anything. Back then it mattered.
No doubt.
I mean, I would have taped that thing to Jimmy and said, hey, Jimmy, I'd probably paid him. Say, listen, I'll slide you a few hundred. You know, about 3 days into camp, I'm going to need a break. Because back then, nowadays they get breaks anyways. They get breaks to play or veteran day off. I'd never heard of such a thing. I don't think it existed. It was not in the vocabulary of our head coach.
Mm-mm.
So I would have, if we could have slapped on Jimmy, and all of a sudden it's like, man, Tony is running way too much. And boy, he's really gotten fast.
But he's still really huge for some reason. Really, I don't know.
So
let's
give him a break. We don't want him to pull a hamstring.
I got a question for you. Do you think Jerry Palmieri, the strength and conditioning coach back then, could have figured all that out?
Yeah, come on. Jerry's still a strength coach. Won 2 Super Bowls in New York. You don't think he could figure it out?
He wouldn't have figured it out. You gave your tracker to
Jimmy. Oh, he wouldn't have figured it out.
No.
I thought you mean, could he understand the whole GPS concept? I'm like, yeah, I think so. But as far as him figuring out, no. I think I could have fooled Tom, too.
You're a sneaky guy, Tom.
Well, there's no need to do that anymore because they take care of the players much better. But back then, it was every man for himself.
Yeah, you were trying to get a little break every now and then.
You never got a veteran day off, did you? Jeff?
Not here.
No.
There's no such thing. It didn't exist.
No, like when I was in New York, there were certain guys that if they were at a certain age, like every third practice that they would get off, and it would kind of rotate that way through. But down here, no. We didn't have any such. Now, there was a couple days where I was dressed, and John Pease just said, hey, look, you're not really doing much today.
But that wasn't because of Tom.
No, it wasn't because of Tom. It was because John Pease was sitting there going, I can't have this guy in his 10th year running every rep. Doesn't make any sense.
Because they knew, too. I mean, the assistant coaches
sure they
are
did.
Like, come on now.
Some did not care.
We'll take your calls coming up, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. The Jags are on the field tomorrow. Season ticket members only at tomorrow's practice, but the Jags will have 10 practices open to the public this training camp. Register for a free ticket at jaguars.com/training camp events. We'll talk about who's on the field, off the field for the Jags tomorrow right after this. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
I quickly realized that my schedule is no longer priority number one. So I would normally come in nice and early and train early, and then have that. But now, if she doesn't sleep well, if my wife says, "Hey, I need you to do something," that means I got to come in at like 6 o'clock at night to work out instead. So things have changed a little bit for me when it comes to that.
Paul Posluszny, Jaguars linebacker, earlier today. Life changed in the off season for him and his wife. They welcomed their first child just a couple of weeks ago.
Congratulations to him.
And
his wife.
Yes, and he had to change his workout routine. He's known for being here all the time working out, but things change when
of all my years of you know playing, covering the National Football League, which is, you know, for the better part of 37 years now, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody quite like Paul Posluszny. I really don't.
In what sense, though?
It's just the way that he works out, the intensity that he works out, and, I mean, even on game day, you know, if fans ever get to a game early, and I don't even know if they actually open up the stadium at that time when he's out there, his pregame workout that he goes through on game days, I get tired watching it.
He's got medicine balls. He's got all kind of stuff going on, right?
It's the intensity that he brings to workouts is legendary. I mean, that's why the guy looks like Captain America.
That's why he lost all that weight.
And that's why I don't.
That's why he lost all that weight after the pec injury. But now he's back. He's ready. He says he's close to his playing weight, ready to roll right now.
Yeah, and it's gonna be fun to watch him this year because, you know, if you can get Sendarek Marks back healthy. It would have been nice to have Dante Feller, but the additions that they've made with Dan Skuda and Jared Odrick, and then Ziggy Hood's got another year under his belt, you know, kind of breaking the old habits of playing in a 3-4. The cornerbacks are going to be better. You know, you've added some guys in the secondary.
What about
experience
safety?
Is going to make
safety?
Them better. You know, so I think it's going to be good.
What about free safety, Jeff?
Yeah, free safety, Jeff.
What about it?
You think, are we better there?
Well, I think they are if they get Sample back out on the field and get a little competition with Sergio. Competition's good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the one position that's still – I mean, you know, you hope Sample is the guy. I mean, because
– Well, maybe Dave Caldwell can play safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should ask him.
Come on, you want to come in and answer that question, Dave? He couldn't pass the physical.
Yeah, well, doesn't look right. Like it. But no, but it's the one – I mean, look, yes. All seriousness, on absolutely. Defense, it's the one position that – you know, they wanted to make the play for McCourty, the true free safety back there, the big rangy guy.
Mm-hmm.
He signs before we ever get to free agency. You know, I think would everyone agree that last year was really two strong safeties playing back there with both Josh Evans and Sip? I mean, those are more strong safety box style players. And so now you get a guy.
Well, I think
Sergio Brown. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, he was a good player, but he was a role player.
But he was more of a box player.
Yeah, a box player, role player as well. And now you have Sample, who is, I mean, looks more like a free strong.
Looks
safety.
Like a box player.
Looks like a box
but
player.
But he's got ball skills.
But he has
free.
Ball skills. So I mean, that's the one guy. If we're going to say we're better at that position, I think. I mean, him being healthy is really important.
That's the one guy that I really wanted to see start training camp. Yeah, I wanted to see him to be able to compete. I mean, it's unfortunate that he broke his arm back in off-season workouts on the practice field. And I guess the reports are that maybe, you know, around the second week of games in the preseason that he may be available. But he's a guy, and what impressed me maybe the most about watching him was, first off, just nearly every opportunity that he had at Louisville to catch the ball, he caught the ball. But his ability to tackle in space. I think that's one thing that definitely, with him being on the field, definitely would improve right away.
And for him, remember, he transferred in. It was a new place, a new defense, a new look for him, and he learned it right away.
See, and that's the other thing to remember. You know, a lot of people that I have heard talking about this, you know, what is many to be expected, a training camp battle between Sergio Brown, Josh Evans, and James Sample, they're kind of discounting James Sample just because he's going to miss approximately 3 to 4 weeks of practice. And my response to that, yeah, that might be true, but you also have to remember is that he ended up going to Louisville or transferring to Louisville and showed up there right at the start of their training camp last year, earned a starting job, and started the entire season.
Okay.
Tony's skeptical.
It's a little different
all right,
here.
Tony.
I know.
I mean, Go ahead.
It's maybe a little bit apples and oranges. This is the NFL. That's college. I mean, how complex is Louisville's defense? We don't know that. I mean, how much do they ask him to do? We don't know that, you know. And, by the way, if you're a superior athlete in college, you can get away with a lot of things, and you can learn on the run. That doesn't happen in the NFL. Now, maybe he is just a genius, and he can pick it up like that. I hope that's the case, but, I mean, I know everyone wants to, hey, you know, look at Louisville, what he did. He showed up, and bam, great.
No, but it's just it's something positive to look at.
It's a positive.
And that, you know, if he's going to miss – no, I agree with you totally.
Way to go, Tony. Just ruin the whole thing, man.
I'm not ruining anything. I'm just trying to be a –
Oh, he makes a good point. It is different. But here's the other thing that you would kind of put into the frame of reference. The Jaguars don't run an overly complex defense.
Nope, they don't.
They really don't. I mean, it's very – I don't want to say simple, but it is. They don't do a lot.
Their goal is to make it as simple as possible to allow the guys to play as fast as possible.
So that's,
that's one of their philosophies.
That's positive for James Sample.
How does Jonathan – I'm sorry.
No, he looks good, though. I mean, he looked good before he broke his arm.
Sample,
yeah. Yeah, looked great.
What does Jonathan Cyprian have to do to really break out this year?
Start making plays on the ball.
Ball skills.
Well, ball skills and then also impact plays.
Which is balls. I mean, that's
yeah. Well, plays, intercepting the balls, and I consider ball skills. But the other one is cause fumbles, tackles for loss. You know, he needs to be one of those guys, and that's one of the things that made Troy Polamalu. Troy Polamalu was never a great space player. You know, as far as
he made plays though,
but he make plays. I mean,
always there
causing fumbles, recovering fumbles. I mean, he made when it came time to have. What I call momentum-changing plays, he had the ability to do that. Ed Reed, too. But Ed was making it,
center
intercepting
field,
the balls, playing center field.
That's right.
And so Cyprian has to be able to impact the game in a different way. And that's something that, you know, I thought that his first year, he did some things that I thought impressed me, you know, for first-year safety. And I thought last year it was just kind of okay.
Okay is a great way to
didn't see a big jump.
It wasn't great.
No.
It wasn't bad.
It's
it wasn't
okay.
Like, it was okay.
He needs to take a step up.
A few injury notes today. We heard earlier this week, Derek Marks, James Sample on the active, physically unable to perform list. They can come back any time. Cap Cappy's on the active non-football injury list. Came in with some hamstring issues. His right hamstring, he's day-to-day. Storm Johnson, active non-football illness list, medical issue. They're all out on the field with training staff, but not during football activities, and they all count against the 90-man roster. And also Dante Fowler Jr. will go on IR in September, but has been here in the building every day.
And I know a lot of people have questions about Dante Fowler. What can he do and what can he do? Look, he's just rehab.
That's
he's
all
so
he can
close
do.
To having meetings. An ACL reconstruction. You know, his rehabilitation will be mostly in the training room or in like a pool or in the weight room. And he's not going to be on the field doing anything. And if you were the Jaguars, a lot of Jaguars now might want to actually, okay, well, can they put him on injury reserve right now? No. Because if you put him on injury reserve right now, I think he actually gets exposed to other teams to be able to do that. And I think that's the case.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's the case.
I don't know.
That's why they would wait until September to put
there
him on injury reserve.
There has to be a reason they would wait. I mean,
yeah, there's a timing issue.
So he counts against the 90-man roster then?
Right now, well, yes. Until he's on the IR.
And see, that's what I'm saying is
you
that
can't
you remember
right now
remember the cornerback?
Was that the Cleveland
with
corner
the Cleveland
that
Browns.
We snagged?
That's
it was
right.
Like an unwritten rule. No one's going to
no
take
one's going to touch a guy going to injury
it
reserve.
It takes 24 hours to clear, and Gene said,
exactly.
Too bad, I'm going to take him.
So I think that's what's going on here with Dante Fowler.
I think we ended up cutting him like a year later. It was great.
What was his name?
He's still in the league, though. I saw him play last year somewhere. Don something?
Yeah,
I don't remember. We'll look that up.
That's all these rules.
That's right.
You've got to carry him on the active roster, and then you can put him on injury reserve in September.
That's why we have Tim Walsh around here, right?
Worst
keep all that straight.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping to see him today, and maybe you guys can fill me in on this. I was wondering if Marcus Mariota had offset language in his contract.
Compromised.
What was the compromise, though?
Like some of it was
some was be, some wasn't.
Yeah, some was offset, some wasn't. They like met in the middle somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what I mean, it's all set, right? What can you?
No, offset language is so if they cut him, the offset language means that if you get cut as a player in the first round, let's say you have $10 million bonus, and you have offset language in there, meaning that if you sign with another team, the team you got cut from doesn't have to pay it. But if you have no offset language or vice versa, whatever it is, if you have language that says you can keep the money no matter what.
Now, what it is with offset language is that if a player gets, like, for example, if Mariota got cut by the Titans, which you know is not going to happen.
But he goes and signs with someone else.
And he goes and signs with somebody else.
The guaranteed money the Titans have to pay.
The Titans would be able to get credit for the money that he's making for some.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's the offset, yeah.
Okay.
I know. I can't remember. If there is offset language, it means you – do get to keep the money. If there's no offset language or one of
no offset language, you can double dip.
Yeah, no offset language, you double dip. And the Titans wanted offset language
in simple terms. But it's much more complicated.
But that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Like coaches. Perfect example. Doug Marrone had no offset language in his contract, meaning if he got left, not only did he get his money for the following year, he could go make whatever he wanted from the Jaguars and the Bills still had to pay him. Most coaches have offset language in their contract, meaning if they get fired or they're from Team A and they go to Team B, whatever Team B pays them counts as credit towards their salary. If they don't work, they get their full salary. That's the exact same thing is what the players, what Mariota was fighting over.
How many? I wonder how many first-round picks have ever been released after 4 years or 5 years. That's an interesting question.
It is. Not a lot, probably.
You know, because there's not many. You know, there's not many that ended up with another team.
Manziel might be.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you read the reports. I mean, he's back up and didn't perform well.
The one that I can think of is.
All offseason, the guy was in rehab. I mean,
Trent Richardson.
Trent Richardson, there's a great one.
Well, he's traded from Cleveland to Indianapolis, but then he got cut by Indy.
And there was a fight for the guaranteed money.
Yeah. Not many, though.
No.
Doesn't happen often.
You have to be really bad.
He's pretty bad.
No, I'm just saying you have to be really. I don't want to say really bad. You have to perform really poorly.
Which he did.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
All the above. Get more in 2015. Become a Jaguars season ticket member. You'll get access to amazing benefits 365 days a year. That includes a season ticket member only practice tomorrow at training camp. Great seating options available for any budget. Visit jaguars.com/tickets or call 633-2000. We'll talk about the camp setup. Where is the team? What happens when the team's not in the building during training camp? We'll get some experience from Tony and Jeff.
Don Carey. That's from correct. The Browns. Thank you from one of the my Twitter followers.
It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
I mean, he's been great with the offense and helping us out. You know, as an offensive line, if we have questions, we'll go to Blake. And we'll figure it out together. You know, we've been watching film together, so I'm excited to see what Blake does this training camp.
Brandon Linder earlier today, Jaguars right guard, talking about Blake Bortles and what he expects to see from the signal caller this year. Republic Services, the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. The official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions. And they will take it from here. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Boselli, it's Jaguars Thursday. How good can Brandon Linder be this year, guys? Can he be a Pro Bowl guard?
If you put the floor at where he was at last year.
can he be a Pro Bowl guard?
Yeah.
Why not?
What's he have to do to get there?
Play better.
Thank you, Tony. Jeff?
That's what I mean. He's got to be consistent. Well, he's got to play well.
Well, I mean.
And here's the other thing. As an offensive guard. In Jacksonville, your team has to be better.
Yeah, your team. I was just going to say that. I mean, to make the Pro Bowl in Jacksonville, you got to have a good football team. I mean, that's just clear and simple. But there is no doubt that he had one of the best rookie seasons, maybe the second best rookie season of a Jaguars offensive lineman in history, second to him, to Tony. I mean, I'm trying to think of other guys.
Give me some other rookies.
Brad Meester played as a rookie.
Brad Meester played great.
Played pretty good, but he's a guard.
So is Linder.
No, I know.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, so Linder reminds me of probably – Linder was probably more powerful than Brad. Brad was very smart. Now, Brad was on a better team, too, so it probably helped him a little bit. Yeah, so Brad had a good rookie year. Mo Williams had a pretty good rookie year at right tackle. Brandon Linder's right up there. He's going to be a really good player. I mean, listen, if he stays healthy and continues to work and get better – and this team gets better, he'll be a Pro Bowl player. I'll say this. Forget whether he makes the Pro Bowl or not. He'll be in my opinion, and I said this last year after watching him, I believe he'll be a Pro Bowl caliber player in his career. I think that's who he should be. That's his talent level.
I mean, it's like Fred Taylor.
Right.
I mean, Fred Taylor played in New York. How many Pro Bowls would Fred Taylor have gone to?
Yeah, you're right.
You know?
That's true.
Well, the hard part about Fred, if you look back, the hardest part about Fred Taylor is if you look at the guys who made it in front of him, like Fred Williams had like 13, 14 yards. But for whatever reason, every year there'd be like three guys who had 16, 15.
Marshall Faulk.
Yeah, it would have. He'd be fourth in yards. Now, and so a lot of teams, that's how the Pro Bowl's picked. You know, guys get in the meeting room.
They look at the stats.
They look at the stats and say, oh, here are the three top rushers in the AFC. That's who goes. Now, if you're asking me, Fred was a better player than them. But that's how a lot of times those things are done.
Media market plays a big role.
Sure it does.
You know, because, I mean, what are the
exposure?
Well, I'll say this.
Players are no different than fans. Yeah. Well, you know, what are they seeing on SportsCenter?
Yeah. I'll say this. I mean, I was a first alternate my second year. But then what really vaulted me to being
success,
known,
team success.
We went to the playoffs, so team success. I had a good game against Bruce Smith, and we won. Trust me. If we don't win that game and I play the exact same game, people aren't talking about that still to this day as a dominant performance. Now, I might have known it, and the guys who played the game might have known it, and the teammates might have known it, but the average fans and everyone else, because no. And so that's why I love football. And that, I mean, so much of it is about team. I mean, for a lot, especially the position I played, you know, your peers might know how good you are, and the guys you play against know how good you are. But the average viewer doesn't know unless you're on a good team.
Well, and here's the other
and
thing.
You're in big games where they can watch you. Sure. It's nothing against – I'm not making a disparaging comment about fans, just reality.
You don't get exposure either all the way around the league. I mean, like, for example, let's say back in the day Tony had a great season. And, you know, you play your division and then you play a lot of teams kind of scattered out amongst the AFC. And but you don't play, so you may focus in on one other division in the AFC. So maybe another team never even saw Tony play on film all year long because they didn't have any common opponents.
Right.
You know, so that plays a big factor in it.
But that kind of thing would even out because nobody has all the opponents.
Well, right. But that's why team success breeds Pro Bowls because then.
Then they see
good
that.
Teams are playing on Sunday night. Good teams are playing on Monday night.
The only exception for that is if you're a position that has big stat numbers. So if you're if you get a lot of sacks, you're going to go to the Pro Bowl. I don't care what team you're on. If you get a lot of interceptions, you're going to go to the Pro Bowl. Don't care what team you're on. You get a lot of yards, catches, you're going to the Pro Bowl. Doesn't matter what team you're on. But if you play a position where you got to really – and sometimes the best corner or the best safety isn't the guy who gets the most picks.
That's right.
But that's a lot of times, unless you're that marquee guy or you're playing in a marquee city or you're on a good, really good team, the average player, fan, and everyone else doesn't know that. And so that's why, listen, the Pro Bowl is not a perfect science. It's not. I mean, there's guys every year who make the Pro Bowl that don't deserve it, and there's guys who deserve to make it and don't make it.
I always lean on the All-Prisco team, the All-Pete Prisco team.
We all do. In fact,
yeah, Prisco's maybe just he's a notch above, barely.
But he's above him.
He's above him.
Okay, well, there we go.
No, you know what? I always thought
I'm just joking, Pete.
I always thought guys who really covered the game closely, Pete would be one of them, and the personnel guys and the coaches, and then my peers who I played against had the best view of what time of player I was. The fans, listen, I get asked now about, like, offensive linemen, and if I haven't watched them, I'm going by reputation.
Yeah.
And, Jeff, we watch a lot of film, but we don't watch every team all year. You don't study every team.
Nope.
Study the teams that we play. And now you might watch them play against that team, so you get a glimpse of them.
But it's the same thing I talked about. You don't get exposure to all the different divisions.
It's hard unless you're really following it closely. And in all seriousness, that's why I enjoy what Pete does. And I enjoy writers like Pete because Pete follows the game closely. He watches.
And he talks to people.
And Pete watches every game every week. Now, I think I know more about the intricacies of playing offensive line than Pete, but Pete watches more football than I do.
Pete might argue that point.
No, I promise you. Trust me, we will Monday night.
That's the way it works.
But he watches more football than I do, and he gets more exposure to a lot of these guys. So,
let me ask you this about Linder, though. A lot of new around him. Could be a lot of new around him. Maybe not.
Yeah, the new around him is going to help him. Well, the guy by the name of Parnell right next to him.
Parnell to the right. If it's Wisniewski to the middle, That only helps
everyone,
Linder,
why
right?
Why is everyone assuming?
If it's, but why I assume, is, no, I was
you're part of,
if.
Tony, you're part of the group.
Take this podium.
He's full go practicing ahead. Tomorrow.
Great.
Wisniewski, it's a competition. It's going to happen.
It is a full competition.
There you go. It could be Bawenko, the same guy as last year. Great.
No, but you started the you started
if it's
off.
Wisniewski,
nah,
it's a new guy. That's what I said.
What everyone's doing in the media, and which trickles down to the fans, giving this job to Wisniewski. I don't see it.
I didn't give it the job yet.
I'm not saying he's not going to win it. I'm not. I have no dog in the fight. I just have. I've been a big Bawenko fan, and Jeff can verify this from the first OTA I saw him last year. I said this kid's going to be good. Now I could be dead wrong, and Wisniewski could beat him out. He has experience in Greg Olsen. He's a veteran player. He has more starts. He's a good football player. Taking nothing away from him.
He's a solid player.
Solid player. Here's the thing. He's coming off a. A shoulder labrum. He missed all the offseason. There's going to be some rust on him. And he's, in my opinion, competing against a good football player. The great news is this. We are going to come out of this battle with a good center. I just don't like people like you.
Whoa, don't point
JP,
to me. Don't
who are
point
ignorant
to me.
And are just assuming that it's Wisniewski's job. That's not fair to Bawenko. Am I wrong, Jeff?
No, I think you hit it dead on the money.
Thank you.
I think JP, if JP had said, you know, the center position being upgraded with either Wisniewski or Bawenko and use them in the same sentence. That might
work. Because he basically said they're going to be upgraded around him.
Yeah, with Wisniewski.
He has all new guys around him.
If he has all new guys around him. Run the tape.
And then you looked, at Jeff and I and knew that you'd stepped in it and you tried to change course.
Oh, it's going to be a long camp with you two clowns here. But the point was, if there's new around him, that can only help him, right? If the new is better around him, right?
Absolutely.
It only helps Linder in the middle on the right side, right?
You know, and if you consider the fact that Brandon Linder, how many different right tackles did he play with last year?
One, two.
Three.
Yeah, see?
Three right tackles last year. And hopefully, you know, you get a healthy Jeremy Parnell for the entire season at right tackle. It's only going to make him better. I mean, you could say the same thing about the other side of the ball.
Can I just say this, though?
I can't wait to hear this. Yes.
More than anyone around him is the fact that he has had a full offseason and now he's a year experience. That's more important than anything. If you're a good player, now, does it make your job easier if someone is good next to you? Yes. But if you're a good player, it's going to show up. I believe Brandon Linder is a good player, and I think the best thing for him is the fact that he's gotten a year experience and he's got bigger, stronger, and he's going to be a better football player. So you come up with, I mean, all these stupid.
Don't quit pointing
to
me.
No, I'm pointing to you because I'm tired of it already.
I'm going to come across this table.
Don't look at me.
Get out of here, Joe. Whatever. You'll never miss a Jaguars
kickoff. Play that one more time, Joe. Let me hear one more
time. Don't look at me.
When you ride the JTA Stadium shuttle, service begins.
What did you say exactly? Don't look at me, how?
I don't know. Whatever.
Say it one more time, Joe.
Don't look at me. Don't.
Yeah.
What was the last thing?
Let's go to break.
I can't understand. I think that tie is cutting off the circulation to your brain.
Let's never miss the Jaguars kickoff, and you're at the JTA Stadium shuttle. Service
that going
2 hours
in the library
before the game and runs until 1 hour after the game ends. The JTA Stadium shuttle, your ride to Jaguars action. When we come back, we'll look around the National Football League.
Yeah, we got to talk about a guy who made Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Check out the all-new Jack Hanania's Infinity of Orange Park. It's brand new and has all the amenities you can dream of. It's like the Taj Mahal of luxury dealerships with a huge selection of new Infinities. Final segment, Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Vaselli, Jeff Loggeman. Let's look around the National Football League. We start off with the New England Patriots. They've been in the news recently. You might have heard about this, guys. The league, of course, filed a lawsuit seeking confirmation of the arbitration in New York. The Players Association filed a competing lawsuit after the fact in Minnesota, but now the Minnesota case has been transferred to New York. What's next? What we got?
Oh, a big legal fight. Yeah, I'll tell you who's happy is the lawyers. They're going to make a lot of money. Jeffrey Kessler, whatever his name is, making a lot of money. My guess he's probably $1,500 an hour, and he's going to rack up a nice bill. That's all that really matters, I guess, because at the end of the day, a story that should have been over a long time ago. And I guess where I think both sides blew it, it should have been addressed immediately, as quickly as possible. And the bottom line is, and I've said it from day one, if Tom Brady would have got up on the microphone and Bill Belichick and said, listen, it was never our intentions to do anything. I like having the footballs at the lowest possible PSI, and I asked my guys to do that. Obviously, they went a little too far. I take the responsibility. I'm sorry. We're not trying to cheat the game, and all I can do is apologize for the actions, and let's move forward. And guess what? At that point, no one cares. The league probably says, okay, here's a $25,000, $50,000 fine. You know, whatever. It's a small fine. It's a small issue, and we move on. But because he gets on the podium and says, I have no idea, which everyone who plays the game and every quarterback who's ever played the game, you know how inflated or deflated the balls are as soon as you touch them. And for him to say, I have no idea, do nothing about it, and come across like this, and the Patriots to do their typical stonewalling junk, making life difficult, that gets the league in a bad situation, and the league reacted because they had messed up so many other things, public perception-wise, so they got to get this one right, and they go extra hard, and now we're sitting here when the start of camp comes, and we're talking about footballs of a game that was 45-10, whatever it was, and it should be over. I mean, both sides handled it awful. Well, I'm just tired of it. I mean, part of me just wishes Goodell, and I knew he couldn't. We just said, listen, I'm taking the fine. I'm taking the game away. You're fined. You can play opening day, and let's move on.
Well, here's the thing. The case that the NFL PA filed in Minnesota has now been turned over to New York.
Kicked over to New York.
That's where it's going to be at. But I think the commissioner's office was probably under a lot of pressure from other owners, not just because of what happened, but
the
also
history of the Patriots.
The history of the Patriots.
And the view that the league is taking special care of them.
You know, so I get it. I mean, I get why Roger Goodell didn't want to back off. And
you know what I'd have done if I was Roger, though?
Right move.
You know what I'd have done, Jeff? Because he has the right to do it. I'd have got a third-party arbitrator to make the appeal, to hear the appeal. And I'd take myself out of it. I'd have said, we gave him four games, and we're out of it. But the risk of that was the third-party arbitrator comes back and says, zero, and there's no.
Hey, look.
And then you look like an idiot.
The league knows things that they're not sharing. They know more.
My favorite is he's destroyed. My favorite whole part of this is Tom Brady saying he has a policy of destroying all phones and SIM cards with him. Okay, I don't buy that. But let's say that is the case. But then they produced a phone they actually found that got through the policy and tried to show that one. It's like, wait, so you can't have it both ways. Just. The whole thing is nonsensical to me.
Yeah, but that's not the best news from around the league.
Well, no. Yeah, we'll get to that coming up. Before we off the subject, last question on the subject.
Yeah.
Best guess right now, does Brady play week three?
Yes.
Against the Jags.
Oh, does he play week three? I'm gonna say no.
Jeffrey?
No.
I think it getting kicked in New York,
I don't think that matters.
Well, I don't know, but it's going to be in their backyard, and they get away from Judge Doty, who's been a little bit of a headache for him. Doty, whatever.
The Arizona Cardinals in the news this week. Jen Welter added as a training camp preseason intern with the Cardinals, working with inside linebackers, a former collegiate rugby player, played 14 seasons of pro football, mainly in Women's Football Alliance. What do you make of this news?
I think it's great. And I give head coach Bruce Arians for giving her the opportunity, and it's not like she's not qualified. I mean, much like the first female official that will be on board with the National Football League this year, if somebody has the qualifications, I think it's great, and she clearly has the qualifications. Now, it's only going to be an internship, but internships in the past have turned into full-time positions
if you're good.
Organizations if you're good and you have the merit. So good for her.
Here's the reality. She said it best. I think she said it. Maybe it was Bruce Arians or someone else. All players care about is if you can help them. And if you can help them get better, then guess what? They'll love her. If it's a joke and she can't help them get better, she won't coach in the league.
No, there's been women high school football coaches, head coaches that have been extremely successful.
If she can help, I'll tell you this. If she could have figured out how to help me, you know, have an edge on Sunday, come coach me. I don't care. What does it matter? But if you can't help me, then I don't care if you're male, female, or whatever. I have no time for you.
Chiefs strong safety Eric Berry cleared to practice this week less than 8 months diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. He continued to train during his chemo treatments, finished the chemo in May, deemed cancer-free June 22nd. What a story.
I can't even train right now when I get a cold.
Nah,
I don't even train when I'm healthy, for goodness sake. I mean, good for him. That's awesome.
Tremendous story. And you hope that, you know, the story continues to be happy, you know, for him. And he's a tremendous football player before it, and you hope that he can kind of get back to that level. But that's, you know, that's a big assumption to make, that he can get back to that level after going through what he went through. You know, but, I mean, it's a tremendous story, and kudos to him for having the willpower and the drive to be able to do what he's accomplished. It's truly amazing.
News that just came out a moment ago, Sheldon Richardson arrested July 14th for racing with a gun in the car and a 12-year-old child and the odor of marijuana.
It's great. Apparently. This is one of the great stories of
it
all.
It just came out, what, a few minutes ago.
This is right now when you question humanity. And
this is a candidate for the Darwin Award.
Oh, this is like, where are we going, people? Like, at what point did you think this was a good idea? So he's driving his Bentley. Well, he's driving it first just down Highway 40 in St. Louis or right around that area. Mm-hmm. And he pulls up. He has a Bentley, which is a nice car, probably a couple hundred grand. Pulls up next to a guy, and they want to race. So he gets clocked three times as he's racing this other car. At like 122, 131, and 143 is the top end speed. Cop pulls out, starts chasing him. Now, at that point, you know what?
Gig's up.
Let's just pull over. No, not for Sheldon Richardson. For reasons we'll discover in a second. He decides, Let's start a police chase, because those always end well.
Oh, yeah.
Those go well.
Seen them all the time on cops.
Absolutely. He's swerving around cars, loses control.
Kills his lights,
loses control.
To create more further danger.
Yes, make it worse. Swerving around cars, tries to sneak into a neighborhood, pull into a driveway that is not him with no lights on. But in doing so, has to hit the brakes so the cop sees him. And this is where the story gets even better. Cop pulls behind him, JP.
Yes.
Demands that Sheldon and his two passengers get out of the car. Police officer gets worried when he sees Mr. Richardson reaching for something between his feet, pulls the gun, and commands him to get out of the car immediately. It is found that he has a semi-automatic handgun on the floor of the driver's side car under the mat. And as he exits with the other passengers, one of them is a 12-year-old. And all of them, including the 12-year-old, smelled like they just smoked a blunt. Smelled like marijuana. Congratulations, Mr. Sheldon Richardson. You are not very smart.
This is 2 weeks after being suspended by the league for a positive marijuana
games.
Test.
And
the
four games. For four games. And the best thing is, you know what he says after he gets suspended? He says, all I can really do is show you by my actions that
this was back prior to this incident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
143, Jeff.
He showed.
12-year-old. Everyone's smelling like weed. Now, I'm not saying he was smoking. Maybe just a 12-year-old and the other passenger were smoking in the car, and it got on him. Secondhand smoke, possibly.
Unbelievable.
You ever driven a car 143 miles an hour?
I'm going to take the fifth on that.
No.
But I did not have a 12-year-old, and I did not smell like marijuana.
I have not.
I haven't either.
Actually,
I'm gonna.
I've never gotten. I did drive a car once in the 130s.
Was it on a racetrack? With helmet on?
No, it was not smart. But I was. I'll just say this. In my defense, I was sober. There was no one else around. I wasn't racing, and no 12-year-olds were in the car.
Still not smart.
Oh, I was idiotic. I'm not saying I'm right.
You're much younger than. I'm sure.
Much younger.
Young and dumb.
But, I mean, 12-year-old?
Yeah.
Everyone's smelling like weed? Like, I'll be honest with you. If Sheldon Richardson just got pulled over for doing 143 and the cop pulled him over and he was completely sober, he was racing his Bentley with just him and a couple buddies in the car, I'd be like, that's not very smart.
Not very smart.
But I'm not going to jump on him. But smelling like weed with a 12-year-old and running from the cop, that is dumb.
That's Tony Boselli. That's Jeff Lagerman. For Joe Fortunato and everyone involved, this is J.P. Shadrick. Camp starts tomorrow. We'll see you next week on Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.